Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Only Podcast. I am your co-host, Austin Smith, joined as always by your other co-host, John Kirby. You can find us on Twitter at ACSmith06 and at John_Kirby. And as always, follow the mothership at The Only Colors. Today is Tuesday, December 14th. And John, we are officially one day away from what's becoming a big event in East Lansing, and that is National Signing Day for football. Are you, whose custom jersey have you had made?
I'll tell you, there are a couple guys on the board that I have ready to, if they choose Michigan State, I'm ready to hit send and print on those jerseys. We'll get to those guys, but I want to comment on how quickly and like violently rapid my attitude has been about National Signing Day in literally 1 year. Normally, in my whole life, don't care. Not important because MSU is going to take the underdog. You know, they're going to build some guys up and we'll see him 4 years later. And that's just how we do things around here. Not anymore. No, I am legitimately excited about National Signing Day. And I know that makes me become the thing I hate, but it's kind of exciting to like, I know that the talent has to play itself out, but when you see Nick Saban offering the same guys, you could feel excited about that. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's if Nick Saban's even in the same sentence as somebody from your school, like that's the type of superpower that he has. I read something today. There was some great article in The Athletic who talked about like what's it like to get recruited by or work for Nick Saban.
Yeah.
And Mel Tucker was quoted in it. Another old Michigan State player was in it as well. Name's escaping me at the moment, but I had some stat in there. It's like he has had the number one class in 9 of the last 12 years, which means he only is talking to the cream of the crop and is more often than not securing commitments from those guys. And so there are a couple guys on the board. Well, really just one in particular that Alabama has actively pursued and yet it's likely not going to end up there and might end up at Michigan State. So a couple names to just keep an eye on as, you know, for we don't usually wade too far into the waters of recruiting, but it's just getting too exciting not to now with Mel Tucker in town. So the biggest name, both literally and figuratively, to keep an eye on is offensive tackle Keontae Goodwin. If he's a 5-star, unanimous on every service, he's rated in the top 15 of overall prospects by most, if not all, services. One of the top 2 or 3 offensive linemen in most services. He is a player that would be he would look fine in any single uniform in the country. He would not look out of place in Alabama. Like I said, they're from what I have read, a clear fourth in his recruitment. That is insane, considering they put offensive linemen at his position, the left tackle position, maybe the second most premium position, if not the most in all of football, into the league every couple years. And yet he's not really considering them. So he was on campus at Michigan State last weekend. You probably heard the chants during the basketball game. We want Goodwin from the Izzone. A lot of fanfare. And John, like you said, to be in a discussion for a guy like this, even though he is currently committed to Kentucky, pretty darn exciting.
This is a kid that Saban offered in 8th grade. That's a real thing. So hard to understate. This would be one of the – not the biggest recruit in a very long time for Michigan State, and to be in the conversation is exciting. You know, who's to say what happens on Wednesday? But still, that is, I think the reason we mentioned these names is because all of the other names, commits for Michigan State are firm. What's kind of in lieu is guys that are maybe committed elsewhere that might flip. So, and there are other big names on the board, though, too, Austin.
Yeah, another name that could potentially, again, like you said, was formerly committed to Texas, is now opened his recruitment, is Armani Winfield. He's a 4-star receiver from the state of Texas. You know, he was committed to UT for quite a while, and then he opened his recruitment back up. You know, sources, the word out of East Lansing was that he was pretty into Michigan State. Kid is, once again, like the profile of a receiver that could play for just about anybody in the country, unanimous four star, and would probably be the type of kid. I mean, when, what you've seen from the wide receiving core since Tucker has come in is that everybody will get a chance, right? Like, we've saw seven or eight different dudes play this year, and Winfield is the type of guy, a true freshman, who would be able to come in, and especially depending on who stays and who leaves, potentially get a lot of snaps right off the bat. And again, not look out of place. So, you know, I think one of the things that separates, you know, really the elite programs from the programs that are, you know, a step down is those that level of like elite playmaker on the outside. I mean, look at the teams that are in the college football playoff. I mean, especially on Alabama, you're talking like 2-3 first round style receivers. Michigan at the skill positions, obviously some great running backs, Georgia skill players all over the place, especially tight end. I mean, these high level skill players, like in Armani Winfield, are the type of guys that separate these elite programs. So another guy to keep an eye on. And then finally, and then there are plenty more, but there's one we want to, once again, because we're kind of focusing on premium positions here. There's a defensive end named Zion Young, who is very excited about Michigan State as well, from all reports. Former West Virginia commit, I believe, kind of fits that same tall, lanky defensive end style profile that we've seen from what Mel Tucker prefers up front, pass rusher. I think the reason we wanted to highlight Zion Young is because that is one area that MSU has had a lot of turnover already on this roster. Drew Beasley, Jacob Panishuk, both leaving for because they've ended their sixth year, I believe, of eligibility. Lots of turnover. So Zion Young, another guy, big athletic kid who would probably get a chance to play pretty quickly.
That's right. Yeah, these guys are all exciting. And then you have to be really excited about, you know, locking in one of the better classes that Michigan State has seen in a very long time in East Lansing. You know, if all the commits sign, that would be nearing a top 20 class. Not over yet. This is just the early signing day, but we haven't seen one of those in a while. And that's, you know, kind of what Mel wanted to deliver on. And I will say that, you know, all of these guys are important. A couple of them can be program changers, or at least affect, I think, their trajectory. One of those being Goodwin. If Mel Tucker can land a five-star, then that kind of puts to bed a five-star not from Michigan, to like from nowhere close in the region. I think that's going to make a huge, huge dent in a good way for the opportunity for the future. Because if you do that, then you're doing something that has been rarely ever done at Michigan State. But more importantly, you know, that shows the nation that Mel Tucker can get elite talent to come to East Lansing, and he has no reason to leave at that point, like ever, if you get five stars.
You're absolutely right. And just to crystallize what we're saying about Goodwin, on the 24/7 rankings, he's the number 13 overall player, just so you can appreciate how large he is. He's 6'8", 340 pounds. The number two ranked, just a massive individual. The number two ranked offensive tackle, only behind somebody who is up, Josh Connerly, who is number nine overall and the number one player from the state of Indiana. I think even in Mark D'Antonio's heyday of recruiting, when he had a couple classes that were really well nationally ranked, this would still be the best recruit rankings wise in his, would have been the best in his entire tenure. And not only the best, like overall, but getting a blue chipper at a position, like as an offensive tackle, is like another level of, there's almost like extra prestige and importance on that. I mean, offensive line play, you see it every single year in college football. The teams with the best offensive lines always do well. I mean, look at the teams that are in the college football playoff, Georgia, Alabama, Michigan. I don't know too much about Cincinnati's, but I have a hard time imagining it's measuring up to those three. Those three schools all have incredible offensive lines with first round type of talent or that are just kind of great units that define how their offenses work. MSU obviously had a great running game this year, but there's no question that a talent upgrade is definitely possible. And Goodwin's the type of kid who is obviously physically at 340 pounds and 6'8". And if you look at him, it's not like this blubbery 340. He looks like he could probably add more weight and still look normal and like be ready to play. He could be a plug and play tackle is what I'm trying to say. So this would be not only like this symbolic win for Michigan State, but an on the field kind of a huge addition for a team that needs a tackle going into next year.
Yeah. And, you know, even if they don't get him, the class will be really good. I think you said the only person in the recent memory that can even touch his, the talent level is probably William Golston out of high school. And he was a five-star from Michigan. And, so that just feels a little different. And, you know, as you mentioned, Winfield is also on the board would be huge. That would be flipping a kid from Texas who's committed to the University of Texas. And while I just feel like that says a lot to the nation too, if you're able
absolutely
to do that at a premium position too, like you said, like a difference maker, that matters in the world of Cruton, a place that we don't know too much about, but it is exciting.
We're learning together.
Exactly. We're along the journey with all of us. The place we're learning at a faster clip than any other program, Austin, is the transfer portal. That's we have a pretty good handle on versus anyone else who no one knows what's going on. And we actually are like the vets of
NFL. Yeah.
So another commit since last time we talked, I believe.
Yeah, I don't remember if did we talk about Jacoby Windman last week?
We
kind of covered him a little bit here, but just to recap, massive additions for Michigan State. Jacoby Windman coming in, linebacker from UNLV, was on a bad team, but certainly was not his fault. 6'2", 230, really, really athletic kid. Had 118 total tackles this past year, 6.5 sacks. And a decent amount of tackles for loss as well. The exciting thing, I read some crazy stat, and I'm not going to get it right because I never get stats right, but I believe he is going to have he had as many tackles for loss and sacks, or like within one in either direction, as Halliday and Crouch both did combined this past year. So like just gives you an idea as to the type of production that you're talking about.
And Halliday was incredible.
Like, so was great. We saw Quaverius Crouch as a difference maker, like as an athlete. And this kid he's right there with him in terms of being an athlete and his ability. And I think one of the things we'll probably notice when you watch is he's, you know, probably going to be a little bit more disciplined than Crouch. I think we said this going into the year. What you've kind of heard rumblings of is that maybe Crouch freelanced a little bit. Windman does not come in with that reputation. He's been playing linebacker for a long time, whereas Crouch had kind of just moved over to the position. So a lot of things to like, whether he is replacing Crouch in addition to Crouch, you're starting to see some really exciting stuff from the linebacker room. And then there is another addition as well, and that is Aaron Brulé. Make sure you say that correctly, Brulé, from Brulé. He is transferred. He has completed the Rocket Watts for a player to be named later transaction between the two MSUs. he is a linebacker who just entered the transfer portal from Mississippi State and has committed to play at Michigan State. He is also from New Orleans, Louisiana, actually knows Jacoby Windman. I believe they grew up together, which is kind of a cool synergy. Roughly the same size, comes in at 6'1", 230. Actually coming into last year on a Mississippi State defense that has had a handful of NFL prospects, was given like a second round grade by Matt Miller, who is NFL draft scout on Twitter. Very well-respected draft mind. And he didn't have a huge year this year, but did have three sacks, kind of plays more of like the jack position. So I think you'll see him as like a stand up defensive end, not necessarily in like the two stack linebacker look that you saw from MSU a lot this year. So his addition, along with, he's kind of like Tank Brown, where you might see them utilized to really get after the quarterback. I think his addition gives MSU some additional elements on defense that they might not have shown last year and should help get after the quarterback.
Yeah, and the other thing that's exciting about the offseason that we're going to keep an eye on is we know, and we've talked at length about how this scheme was created to minimize the talent deficit that MSU had, especially around the perimeter of the secondary. We just wonder if once you start to stack talent in the depth chart, if they change scheme altogether. And I bring that up because you mentioned Brulé in that jack position, and a Tank Brown is another guy who's on the roster that you're just like, how do we get him on the field? And you wonder if maybe the scheme changes altogether to maximize the talent that you have acquired.
Yeah, and I think that that's one of the unique challenges for Scotty Hazleton next year. I mean, I think he looks at it and clearly sees areas for improvement. But improving the secondary isn't as easy as just, like, getting better players. If they're, like, just, hey, get better cornerbacks, you know, sure, would that help? I don't think talent is lacking back there. I mean, you're talking about former really talented guys in Ronald Williams and even Kimbrough and some – Marquis Lowry and Charles Brantley. I mean, there's plenty of talent back there, but we've talked about it a lot on this podcast where it's schematically sort of just the trade MSU was willing to make. Instead of just saying, oh, we need more talent back there, I think Hazleton now is targeting guys up front that he can use to get after the quarterback with maybe a few more exotic blitzes. You didn't see a lot of creativity and stunts and all that stuff up front from MSU last year. I think now with a little bit of added edge personnel, you know, like Brulé, like Tank Brown getting unleashed a little bit, I wouldn't be surprised if there's another addition or two. There's a lot of kids in this recruiting class who play those positions. So it's going to be very interesting to see how he's able to turn some of these guys loose. And you know, it wouldn't surprise me to see an improved pass rush next year, even with Panishuk and Beasley off to the next journey in their professional lives. Probably the NFL for Panishuk. Maybe not for Beasley. I don't know.
There's no such, if there's anything that you can't have enough of, it's pass rushers. So that is in football. There's no limit. You did mention you feel like the talent is fine and it's a bit more schematic than anything. I also think that you'll see Mel go to the portal to find it. If there's a talent enough, there's someone worth going to get to give the full court press to add another body back there. Do you feel like that he'll be in the looking there for the second?
Yeah, for sure. I think what will be interesting is to see how many, well, secondary for sure. I mean, I think there's a couple of guys, not only as true freshmen that are going to be added in this recruiting class. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a body or two. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all. I think we've actually, that is probably one of the hardest things to find in the portal is these good defensive backs, because typically when defensive backs leave, it's because they weren't able to cut it at their last program which, you know, we've kind of seen that. Those are some of the guys we got last year. Saw good moments from all of them, but you kind of saw the reason why they were maybe looking for new opportunities sometimes.
I'll go to bat Ronald Williams in that he was sufficient.
I thought he was sufficient.
Right.
We saw good moments from Kimbrough. He won a game for us against Nebraska. He had a couple of good moments. I think we saw good moments from Marquis Lowry when he was healthy. We haven't gotten to see Kari Crump yet. So Justin White made a huge play against Michigan. There's plenty of good examples. It's just, maybe that level of top level consistency and just sort of like veteran leadership. I wouldn't be surprised if they went and added some bodies there. If I'm looking in the portal, you know, gosh, it's really hard to say. I think up front defensively, you can never get too much help. Wouldn't be surprised if they went for another offensive lineman, and kind of depending what happens in the wide receiver room, specifically with Naylor and Reed, whether they stick around or pursue the NFL, I wouldn't be surprised if a body got brought in there either.
Yeah, the last place we think there also is going to be a huge area of opportunity in increasing the talent level maybe is maybe every position on the offensive line. Now, we are a little unclear on where some certain people stand, but you know, you saw a guy come in and start right away. I think that could probably happen again at either tackle position, depending on if Horst returns.
Yeah, Horst is kind of the great unknown in terms. I think he's, I wouldn't say he's the most important unknown in terms of like guys who could leave or could come back. I think Jaden Reed is very high on that list. We're all assuming Kenneth Walker is going to leave. Honestly, Quaveris Crouch, depending on what he wants to do, could be a really big impact player. But we're just talking about it with Goodwin, that those tackle positions are so, so critical to the success of any football team, pro or collegiate. So to have, bring back a guy like Horst would be really, really big. If he's gone, I mean, Goodwin is absolutely lined up for a lot of PT there if he were to commit to Michigan State. Let's say worst case scenario, neither of them are a part of the team. I think MSU absolutely hits the portal. And we've seen a couple of really interesting tackles enter. I mean, guys, if you look around, there's so many programs that have gone into flux with new head coaches, like guys from schools, like you've seen a ton of guys enter from Florida, LSU, Oklahoma, USC. I mean, big names, former big recruits from big programs are becoming available. And there's a couple on that offensive line that I've seen in there. That I will not be surprised at all if MSU chases down. And honestly, I think more kids, you're going to see another wave of kids enter the portal after the bowl season. I think after these classes are signed, some of these dudes are probably going to see the writing on the wall and ultimately decide to jump in and test their luck somewhere else. So there's a long ways to go in the off season. And yeah, I there will be a handful of new faces that you hear about here in the next, call it, month to 2 months.
Yeah, and you just one more quick thing. Michigan State provided three separate preferred walk-on positions to men on the offensive line. And these are guys that had opportunities at maybe D2 schools, and they have the body. I mean, all these guys passed, the Mel Tucker, like, size factor. They just didn't have whatever else, you know, was necessary to make them a Big Ten recruit. But you can take a flyer on that and work on it for 4 years, right? And
yeah,
might find something there.
I mean, it's a lot of two-star guys. Like one of them, Jacob Merritt, he checks in at 6'6", 270. He was on here as on 24/7 as a two-star recruit. Had an offer from Marshall, Dayton, Brown, you know, small schools. But ultimately, I think Michigan State's idea here is, again, you've got the profile. Physically, let's see if you can get a shot. We also, I think the other ones were Devin Runnels. He's another tackle from Flint Beecher, 6'6", 330, two-star recruit. I don't think he had much in the way of offers, but again, big body, projectable. And then I think Andy Hartman was the last one. And I want to look him up because he was, I think he's actually from Grand Blanc Community College. So again, a two-star guy, had offers from Bowling Green, Eastern, Wayne State, Northwood University, 6'6", 255. I think it's genius, not only because, like, it's a really smart move on Michigan State's part, because these guys are all from different parts of Michigan. So it's a relationship builder for Mel Tucker. They've all got projectable body types, and they're not taking up scholarships. So it's like, why not take a flyer? We've seen it with Jack Conklin. Jack Conklin was a gray shirt. They made him pay his own way for a year before he was even on scholarship. He turned it into a, you know, NFL first round draft pick. That's not, I'm not saying that's what's going to happen here. It's in all likelihood that these three might never actually play a snap, but I think it's a genius move from a relationship building in the state perspective. And from just like if you're going to throw darts, these are the types of guys that you want to throw them at.
Yeah. I mean, Kaplovich already has one success story. Dan Van Opstel went from walk-on to scholarship player this year and played. So it exists. You know, if you, sometimes you just need to be coached up a little bit. Who knows if these guys were getting that or what the problem was. But like you said, it's a can't miss or a can't lose situation. So we're excited for signing day for the first time ever. it's pretty crazy. And you know, I think we're going to continue to see the portal work its way on the other side as a handful more players left. We don't necessarily need to go through, but I think my one quick takeaway from it, Austin, is this next group of players that are deciding to hit the portal, because it's a two-way street. We know that now. That's part of the game. is that these guys, I would argue that a larger, much larger percentage this time around will get P5 opportunities versus last year's outgoing portal attrition.
From a Michigan State perspective, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we've already seen one example of that with Kalon Gervin, although he flipped his commitment. I don't know if you saw that. He flipped his commitment from Wisconsin to Kansas.
Why is that? Why is that question? I don't get it. Wisconsin is a program falling downward. Kansas is on the rise. Kansas beat Texas. What have you done, Wisconsin?
That's a great point. That's a tremendous point. Yeah, I thought that was interesting. But yeah, a handful of names out there. I mean, I'm with you. I mean, I look around, I see, again, Trenton Gillison, Alex Okello for sure. Chase Klein is getting offers from P5. Michael Gravely had an offer from Penn State within like 6 minutes of leaving Michigan State. Michael Dowell. So yeah, I would agree. I think the ratio will be much larger this year as opposed to last, for sure. John, this has been a lot of football talk and a lot of recruiting talk. I feel like there's a certain son out there who's feeling very ignored right now.
Yeah, it's time to switch gears.
Yeah. Okay. First, let's take a break. 3, 2, 1. Damn, we're back. Oof, I am exhausted. But guess what? We're number 12. We're number 12.
Look at us.
How about that?
Not me. Nope. I'll tell you, this is a fun little basketball team, and I think we texted about it earlier as I was like, you know what kind of sucks is everyone like is riding this like wave, kind of a high on Michigan State hoops right now. You know, you can see them getting better. This is fun. They're winning as a team. You never know who's going to pop. And then 11 day break. And yeah. That kind of let us down a little.
Nothing to keep the momentum going, like a nice 11 day break. Yeah, that's wonderful. But yes, I mean, it's hard to be anything but pretty optimistic right now. I mean, we talked about it last week, how this team was in really looking like they were rounding into form. Nothing that happened last week. If anything, I have become more staunch in my opinion that this is, I think we've now transitioned from, oh, this is a nice surprise to like, okay, we've seen 11 games of this team now. I think we have a better product than we thought coming in.
Absolutely. I think I have switched gears from show me why you are good to show me why you aren't able to be great. And
yeah.
Does that make sense? Like I've
yeah,
changed
absolutely.
The vision of them. And now I'm looking for, because last year, maybe that was just recency bias of being painfully ready to just enjoy a decent season. But you know, shame on me, because this program competes for, you know, Final Fours, and the goal is the national championship every year. And shame on me for forgetting that. And Tom Izzo's got a nice little ball club that's getting better every day. And 2-0 in the Big Ten. And not everyone can say that.
No, certainly not. A lot of teams would love to be able to say that. So the first of those 2-0 was early last week. Michigan State went up to the Barn and won 75-67 against Minnesota. At the time, an undefeated Minnesota team.
Right.
Now, it's still, after 9 games, Minnesota's only loss. That's crazy. Pretty good win. I mean, to be honest with you, MSU was up 13 at the half. Maybe let it slide a little bit towards the second half. We got a great game out of Malik Hall, 15-9 with 4 assists. Marcus Bingham, once again, kind of important defensive player, although he did only have 1 block and actually only played 15 minutes in this game. Gabe Brown with 15-8. Tyson Walker, I think, looked once again very in control, especially running the break and scoring, at 15 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists. Kind of just like a ho-hum complete win. I think my only takeaway from this game is that I found it funny that as the game was going on, that fans kept kind of waiting. It seemed like everyone was waiting for the other shoe to drop. and then it never really dropped. And you could feel this like little level of paranoia still bubbling in the fan base because of last year, I think, more than anything, where we saw MSU kind of drop bad games against stupid teams, even though they were like kind of in it. And then I feel like last year when the first thing went wrong, everything went wrong. It was just like the domino effect of everything going in the shitter. Whereas now you're seeing this team maybe a little bit mentally stronger. And I thought that this game was a great example of that.
Yeah, you're right. This was the second true road game. The Butler game did a lot for this team. Thank goodness. Thanks. But their crowd does not. Same thing with the Barn, man. There were four separate occasions where Minnesota made a push. And, you know, that crucial possession where the crowd wants to get in. They're begging for a stop to get in, you know, where it's like they're right there and you can feel it. And every single time, all four times, MSU answered the bell. And that is not easy, you know, and just completely shut them down. And give Minnesota a lot of credit because they're overmatched talent-wise. You could see that maybe why they only play seven guys, basically six.
Yeah.
That's not a knock. It's just like those guys are tasked with doing a lot. And they hung in there, but it never really felt like they had enough firepower to really push it over the top. And I was really pumped to see them answer that bell that three separate times, maybe it was four. And I think the other pieces you mentioned, Bingham didn't play as much, got into some foul trouble. And MSU, you know, certainly gave Marvel a shot, but they went small ball with Hauser at the five. And it didn't work. Wasn't great. That was a new lineup. You know, I think that is a result of those guys not playing together a ton. But I think you might start – we might start to see that a bit more. If and when Bingham does get into foul trouble, and more importantly and more likely, when the matchups dictate it, there are going to be times where other teams are going to try and take Marcus Bingham out of the game by simply playing so small that it's a liability on defense and to pull him away from the basket. I think MSU has the personnel to combat that just fine, which is great.
Yeah, if this is the Joey Hauser that we can get, by the way,
right,
on a regular basis, we should all be thrilled. We should all write him like, you should tweet nothing but nice things at Joey Hauser. Actually, just don't tweet at him at all. But if you're going to say anything to him, be very complimentary about games like this, because this is the Joey Hauser we want. This is the Joey Hauser I think in a lot of ways we should expect from here on out. 10 points, 7 boards, only took 2 shots. Two of those 5 shots were threes. He made them both. Made all 4 of his free throws, 7 boards, 2 assists, only 1 turnover. I mean, you cannot ask for more from Joey Hauser. We said it last week. Everybody needs to take it easy on this guy. And then I think credit, big time credit to him. He bounces back from a week of tough press and ends up putting up a great game against Minnesota. And I actually thought he played pretty well against Penn State too. We'll talk about that game. But if this is the Joey Hauser we can get on a regular basis, I mean, it's just another arrow in the quiver for MSU, like you said, filling in for Bingham. And I think this speaks to like what is so exciting about this team is that one curveball like that crushed the team last year.
Yep.
Just crushed them. What, like you pull out one Jenga piece and that whole thing comes down. This year, because of this functional depth and because of what they have in terms of defensive ability and a point guard, like they can weather these storms and they can plug pieces in, you know, where they need them and really end up winning a game like pretty handily. And I got to give it to Minnesota too. Like Curry and Battle are real players. Those are some guys. Peyton Willis is actually a really nice player too. He just shot really poorly on the night, but I mean, they didn't quit. They kept fighting and they've got some real offensive firepower on that team. And yet Michigan State held them to 67 points, 24 in the first half, made them take some really tough shots. I mean, at the end of the day, the only reason this game was close is because Minnesota made a handful of threes in the last 2 minutes of the game. And guys like Battle, and I know Willis made one. just kind of willed them back into it. I don't know how long Minnesota, what type of staying power they've got. Again, they played seven guys in this game, six of them for more than 24 minutes. I mean, that is completely and totally unsustainable. But you can see when they're going on all cylinders that this is not a team that's going to roll over. It's probably a team that's going to put up 80-plus points on a decent amount of good Big Ten teams. And MSU, on the road, managed to hold them in check. I thought they did a really nice job in this game. This is the type of game that a team that is ranked in the top 15 takes care of and just, like, checks the box and moves on.
And they did just that. And, you know, followed it up against a Penn State team that is not great. But they handled their business almost from about, like, the midpoint of the first half on, winning 80-64. This one fell over even in the beginning of the game. I think it got even was tied 23 all, and it still fell over because Penn State hit three shots, incredibly difficult shots, like fadeaways, ISO fadeaways, it like stuff that shouldn't go in. And when you're doing that and it's only tied, and you know Michigan State right. played great defense each of those possessions, and that's not going to go away, it was kind of going to be over. And it was. Penn State, not a good team, but more importantly, you know, Michigan State, so many guys getting involved. And I think the big one for me is Gabe Brown has scored in double digits in every game this year, except for Loyola, where he had nine. He almost feels like he's erratic, but he's not. He's actually been incredibly consistent this whole season.
I think it's just because his game is so herky jerky. His game is so chaotic that you expect his outcomes to be equally as chaotic. But in reality, like you said, he has been extremely steady, and we've seen just consistency from him. And I think he is benefiting. I don't think this should be lost on anybody here. He is benefiting from having consistent point guard play, arguably more than anybody else on the team, because we always know he's a good shooter. He's shooting, he's never shot lower than 34% from three. He's shooting 41% this year, shot 42% last year somehow. But he's benefiting because he's getting more looks and better looks. And he's playing eight more minutes than he played last year, which, so like I said, more volume. And it's nice to see that he's not just turning into a volume chucker, but he's legitimately, that corner three for him is he's devastating out of that lower fifth of the three point line, because you either have to let him shoot it, and again he's shooting 41%, a very good shooter, or he is athletic enough to go one dribble, two steps, and absolutely cram on whatever defender is going to dare get in his way. I mean, he has kind of gone from a nice role player to, I still think he's a role player, but it's a very plus, like, high ceiling role player. I've kind of let the ship sail of him ever adding anything like off the dribble to his game, aside from going straight to the basket. But with great point guard play, with a big center to do a pick and roll off of, with two other shooters standing out there with you, you do that well and you don't need to do anything else.
Yeah. It's interesting. You mentioned, you feel like he's a role player. I think we'll get in, we have our more holistic view conversation coming up where we'll maybe talk about that a bit more, because he is the captain. You know, this is his team. He is a senior and he has taken that senior leap. But to your point, like, is he the dude? Like, is he going to be the dude? The dude that Aaron Henry was, the dude that, you know, Cassius Winston was, Travis Trice,
So do you want to just dive into that now?
Well, sure. I mean, like, Miles Bridges was the dude. You don't have to be a point guard. Like, and he's done everything right. It's just a matter of how does this team, here's the question for you. I'll tee it up. This team has improved quite a bit. But to pump the brakes, this team is still a second weekend team in March. And what I mean by that, you get past the first weekend of games, you're a second weekend team. They are not a third weekend team off the cuff right now. Can they get there? I think maybe. I think yes. But Austin, what takes this team from a second weekend team to a third weekend team? What has to happen?
I think the good news is that a lot, I think the ceiling there, it's kind of crazy for me to even say, but I think it's a very attainable ceiling. Like, I agree with you, because a second weekend team is a Sweet 16 team. If this team is not a Sweet 16 team, barring, you know, knock on wood, barring injury, like, it would be a huge disappointment. I mean, they really choked, truly, really and truly, because I think in worst case scenario here, you're talking top five seed team. That team should get to the Sweet 16, in my estimation. Yep. But what makes it a Final Four team, because that's a third weekend team, again, I think it's attainable. And the reason I think it's attainable is because there is still so, despite how high the floor has been, the ceiling for the backcourt is immense, and it could be attained. You can't say easily, but like, it is not a stretch to think that a couple of things can happen in the backcourt alone that will take this team from second to third weekend. The first is that Tyson Walker just keeps getting better. And I'm not saying he needs to become Cassius Winston. It's not a realistic expectation, but he is, I mean, you mentioned the guys, and the first three names you mentioned were Aaron Henry, Cassius Winston, and Travis Trice. The common theme there is those are the guys that had the ball in their hand, and they were the straw that stirred the drink for their teams to whatever degree that was, whether it was them scoring, whether it was them finding other guys. They were the orchestrators. I mean, that's what the point guard is at Michigan State, especially. It's like, those are the ones that make things happen, make things go on offense. And what we've seen from Tyson Walker in the last couple of weeks, especially, is he can be that guy and be it against Big Ten teams. Now, I think there's more, and it's just been with time, right? It's not like he came up and had this big first weekend and then kind of like lulled back down and got, but it's been like a steady incline. So is there a plateau in there? Maybe, but there's no reason to think that there isn't another half step left in his tank, and he can be as good a Big Ten point guard as there is this year. I really don't think that's outrageous. I mean, he doesn't look for himself to score a ton. He's been doing it more lately, but just the more time he gets running the pick and roll with Marble, running the pick and roll with Bingham, you know, getting through his offensive sets and stuff, it's just going to get better and better. So I think that's one big thing. The other is Max Christie. Max Christie, we've seen defensively, he's been, I think, underrated, actually, thus far. He's been incredible defensively. You don't see other guards going off. Again, if you look at the box score from Penn State, I mean, Lundy had 18, Jamarco Pickett had 18, but Miles Dredd played 27 minutes and took two shots. Cornwall played 21 minutes and took four shots. I mean, these aren't guys that were tearing him up. So I think defensively he's been great, but offensively he might be Michigan State's purest shooter, and he's not really hitting shots right now. And he's getting decent looks. He's being creative-ish on offense. If he takes that half step, that freshman jump, and becomes more than, I think, a true role player and becomes like a half impact type of guy, I mean, you're talking, then your starting five is above average to great Big Ten point guard, above average Big Ten shooting guard, great Big Ten three, elite Big Ten five. And then it's the combination of Malik Hall and Joey Hauser is at least an above average Big Ten four. And then you've got depth beyond that. And Jaden Akins, who I think a lot of people would consider an above average Big Ten rotational guard and sixth man. I mean, that's where the depth comes in. It's like, it's not just bodies. It's legitimately good Big Ten talent. And the Big Ten is as good as any conference every single year. So I think half steps from those two, And I think where you and I might, I think that's all that you need. I think those two guys, and then everybody else needs to stay producing the same. I think a little bit more consistency from Hall and Hauser would really be the icing on the cake. But I think what you had some thoughts on Gabe as a part of that mix, I think.
Yeah, I think, okay, thanks for the setup. And yeah, I think the great part about Malik and Hauser is you don't, only one of them has to show up. Like, where you're set, you're right. And if Bingham becomes a bit more, a better rebounder consistently, like he can be, we're in really good shape. As it relates to Gabe Brown and it being his team, I completely agree with you that the team reaches its highest ceiling if it becomes Walker's team. And I totally get that you're a third of the way through the season. You transferred here. It's the right thing to do to not try and be the guy. It has to be given to you when you are an outsider, in my opinion. And Gabe Brown's going to have to give it to him. Make it, let it be Walker's team. Gabe will still be the heart and soul of this team as it relates to being vocal. You know, he's never going to not be quiet. But it's got to be in terms of like usage rate. Walker's got to go up. And I think there are two areas that you can see happen in the backcourt that'll tell you if this team is capable of being a third weekend team. I don't know if it's possible for this team to be a third weekend team if these two things don't happen. Walker is going to have to take A.J. Hogard's minutes, and not because A.J. Hogard is playing poorly. A.J. Hogard is an incredible backup point guard and has earned every minute, you know, that he averages, which right now is 18 and a half minutes a game. So Walker, who's averaging 23 minutes a game, he's going to have to take Hogard's minutes. And if he is taking his minutes, that means he's playing at such a level that this team has reached a new area. The other thing that I think has to happen, and related to your point on Christie, he needs to not let Akins take his minutes. Mm-hmm. That's happening right now. And if Max Christie stops that from happening, because Jaden Akins is playing great, consistent basketball as well. But if Christie is playing well enough, not the way he has so far, because he's been given a lot majority of those minutes is because he's been solid on defense, and Tom, I feel like, knows there's more there on offense. If he starts earning back the minute quota has, which is 30 a game, 30, if he earns back to that, and because Christie's playing so well that even Jaden Akins shouldn't see the floor, now you are a third weekend team. And is it there? Maybe. There have been some flashes of it, but those are the guys, and everyone else, and that's with everyone else, you know, status quo. I think you can, Bingham is an anchor on defense. You got depth, like you said. If those guys earn those minutes away from the other two, we got a ball club.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I mean, and it's one and the same, right? Like if they are able to take that half step, I think that's the natural progression of that. The one I would add on top of that is Malik Hall and Joey Hauser. I think if Malik Hall can start eating into Joey Hauser's minutes, which is already happening, but like when you have to tighten the rotation a bit, assuming Tom Izzo is inclined to do so, which is definitely not a guarantee, then I think he's another one that you want to see kind of step up and jump in there when this goes from 10 to 8. But I think the exciting part about this conversation is that I don't think any of those things are outlandish. I think they're all very attainable trends. I would honestly almost even say that some of it's got to be likely, right? Like it seems like built-in progression that should take place. And this week's games just kind of, I think, really solidified that in my mind, that the ceiling is the roof, as they say, John.
You know what's the funniest thing to me is MSU Twitter, love us for it, love the bitch about the rotation in December and January, yeah. Right? It's just our thing. And 20 years have gone by and Tom has figured it out every time so that they're peaking at the right time. But it's just a thing we do, right? He's got it figured out so much that all we can bring ourselves to do is piss and moan about the backup center minute distribution. That's what we're doing. Like, literally, that's it. Where we're like, I really want to see some more Matty Sissoko. Like,
oh my God, you're so right.
That's where we're at, which is such a great thing, right? That means it's pretty much figured out. And now it's just a matter of, like we said, like earning the minutes over somebody else. So it's just funny.
That's the burden of rooting for such a great team. I think it just proves that you can never actually be happy.
You can't be happy.
That's right. You can't. Like, this is like our Bama football fan moment where they're like, oh, we only had 6 first round draft picks last year. You know what I mean?
Too funny. So. Yeah. It's been a fun weekend and more than that, a season so far. We just like to keep the good vibes going. Because like we said a couple pods ago, Austin, we were like, look out. Because this team shouldn't lose a game should be favored in a lot of games. And that game at Michigan was the one that we had kind of circled and said, let's just see where things are at. Well, might even have to start looking.
How about the fact that they're ranked number – I mean, I know rankings don't actually matter, but the team went into the season unranked and has steadily climbed the ranking. They're number 12. They're almost a top 10 team. Sitting here coming off of just a garbage season a year ago where we, by the skin of our teeth, made the tournament, and now all of a sudden you turn around with a lot of the same players and you're number 12 in the country. You're one of only three 2-0 teams in the Big Ten. And you're kind of like, and you're only two losses too. I think this is the other thing that's getting to me, and we'll move ahead and do some other stuff here in a second. But the only two losses are to Kansas and to Baylor. Let's just go ahead and look at where they were ranked in today's poll. Oh, that's right. That's number one and number seven. It's not like and none of the other games have been like particular. I mean, the games in Atlantis were close, but those are tournament teams. Loyola is a great team. I think UConn is still in the top 25. So we're talking about quality, like really like top 40 programs. And Michigan State they've just been sort of this nice little like above average consistent team so far this year. And it's nice to know that our boys still got the fastball. Tom's still got it.
He does. And you know, the other thing is there's a statistic called wins above bubble, which is if every game against a team you play is worth X games. So if you were to lose to Western Michigan, that would put that one would be worth like two games. You like in below the bubble. And then but if you were to lose to Kansas, it's worth very little because it's okay to lose to that team. And if you beat a good team, you get higher. MSU is number one in the country in wins above bubble right now. They have because of their losses are to who you said, and they have some great non-con wins that are going to continue to give. That Loyola game is going to give. Loyola this year, they are 9-2. Their only losses to MSU and Auburn. They're going to be favored in every single game the rest of the year. They very well might lose four games this year. So that game, they're going to keep giving. Who knows if we know Connecticut's going to keep on giving, and who's Louisville is kind of a flip the coin on however they end up now that Mac is back coaching. Which, by the way, what the heck? Which is a perfect transition into our hot seat meter, I think.
By popular demand, we are obviously very excited to transition into basketball season as a podcast. And we thought this was the best way to really mark the arrival with the coaching hot seat meter. We want to set the tone for Big Ten season by just documenting where everybody is. And seeing whose faces we might no longer see after this year. And really the main impetus for this, if we're being completely honest, is the fact that we've already had somebody get fired and it's December 14th. Not get fired, but leave the program.
Well, so. Rare when we're beat to the punch. Usually we're the ones calling for heads and get beat to the punch. So I think we said this, there had to have been some like extracurricular activity, right?
Something had to be going on. So in case you missed it, Mark Turgeon, current leader in the clubhouse for person coach, I should say, who looks the most like their school's mascot, which is probably the biggest thing that we're losing here, retired or just decided to step away from Maryland's program. They weren't having a great year, but he's been very successful at Maryland. I mean, they've won the Big Ten. I think they've made the Sweet 16 at least once or twice. I mean, he's had good teams and like, yeah, this might not have been a vintage one, but still. So very surprising. He's been replaced with Danny Manning, former Wake Forest head coach, former Kansas great, longtime NBA player. And I gotta say, he falls on our NA list because we always try to, you know, because we want to honor the integrity of this segment. We don't rank guys that have only been there. This is only their first year. So first coach on that list is Danny Manning at Maryland. Got to say, if you're going to have to hire an interim coach, Danny Manning's about as good as you can have just like waiting on your bench to take over, right?
Well, and also a name people have heard of, you know,
like, yeah, well, that's what I'm saying.
You can kind of trust that name, potentially. I don't know if he's a good coach or not, but I'm interested to see like how good of a coaching job is Maryland. You know, and I think we'll find out
this, man.
You know what I mean? Like, are they as elite, you know, of a job as they think they are? You know, are they, I just don't know how big of names you're going to see pop for that one. Who, you know, who knows what's going to happen with that, but just find it interesting. The other,
if you want a good laugh, real quick, if you want a good laugh, go find some message board fodder about who they think. This is really, I think more than anything, this to me has exposed what Maryland fans think about the job.
Right.
Because it is preposterous. Some of the names that I've seen gotten thrown around routinely. I've seen Mike Bray from Notre Dame. First of all, like, I don't know how great of a coach he is.
He's good.
But like, yeah, but you think you're going to hire away from Notre Dame? Like, no. Okay, sure. Nate Oates. I've seen flaunted a lot.
Come on.
I'm sorry. He's already at a better program at Alabama right now. And it's like, why that guy is not leaving Alabama for anything less than a blue blood level job. It's just not happening.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a good one. I've seen Ed Cooley, which I actually think is a good one. Sean Miller, which is hysterical. Would love to have him cheat in the Big Ten and take some heat off the other teams. But yeah, it's just like, wow. Like some of these are just Bruce Pearl I'm seeing right now. Like, my goodness, like, what are you guys? Rick Pitino? I'm all in on Rick Pitino in the Big Ten, just for the record. I would love that.
You want a name?
Yes.
This name's going to knock your socks off. Because
perfect.
Kim English. Do you remember that name?
Oh, God. Yeah. Oh, man, that made me feel very old. He's he was a Pistons draft pick, if I remember correctly.
Pistons draft pick, that's right. And now he is the head coach at George Mason. And he was an assistant at Tennessee, had lead assistant at Tennessee prior to that. Yeah, so
that's that one hurts.
That was just to knock us down a peg.
That just hurts. Like, yeah. That really hurts. Oh. God, I don't know what else to say. There are some of these from time to time, like the Byron Leftwich being Tom Brady's coach made me feel extraordinarily old. I don't know. Cliff Kingsbury, like there are names that come up now, and it's just going to get worse from here on out. That I'm like, how the hell are they coaches now? And yeah, okay, great. Hey, guess what? Antonio Gates Jr. is going to be at Michigan State next year too. That's cool. Anyways. God, okay, so the other names that are currently under the NA on the hot seat meter, aside from Danny Manning, Mike Woodson at Indiana, which I was reminded that he is a head coach and just got a real nice laugh out of that. That was fun. Ben Johnson, Minnesota's head coach, admittedly would be in a nice position were he on this list today. And Micah Shrewsbury from Penn State. I will say, I did not know the names of Minnesota or Penn State's head coach before this past week when I was forced to look them up because we were playing both those teams. So that's just something I'd like to share and get off my chest.
You know what? It's okay. Ben Johnson is very much a athletic director, opened up the phone book and just picked one. And Ben Johnson was there.
Ben Johnson?
Yeah, it's like the most.
Ben Johnson.
Yeah. He's a nice coach, actually. I will give him this. He coached the shit out of that team, and that game wasn't just Minnesota's. Like we said, they're surprising. They just went to Ann Arbor, beat Michigan. I don't know how much that win is worth, but I know for a fact that Minnesota is not as talented as Michigan's team. Like, there's a gap. Maybe there isn't. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. But Ben Johnson.
Who's to say?
I like him. You mentioned, yeah, those guys we can't touch. They're all fine. Like, no one's done anything stupid. So,
yeah, Mike Woodson, the hottest of the four, obviously, just by being just by virtue of being Indiana's head coach.
He's never not been on a hot seat either, by the way, in the NBA.
So true.
All right. Which side do we
check? Most fireable man in the NBA for a long time.
I know. Which end of the spectrum do we want to go here?
Let's start with the coldest and work our way up.
Yeah.
So, which means the Kings stay Kings. Tom Izzo got to have the coldest seat in the Big Ten, without question.
Absolutely. Yeah. Not close. And beyond that, we think Chris Holtmann might be very close to attaining that. Obviously, Izzo has had a life contract after his 2000 national championship. Chris Holtmann, I feel like, isn't in the same stratosphere, but is clearly the coldest seat in the league outside of Tom.
He's also 2-0 in the league, ranked number 15. I think they dropped one weird one early in the year, but I know they've lost two games, but I'll be interested to see his name, if his name comes up for any like real blue blood programs. I think Ohio State basketball is like weirdly in the same place as Michigan State football, where you like,
yeah,
you're that half step down from like blue blood, but you're still obviously a great program. So I don't know. I wonder if Ohio State is enough for him, or if other guys are going to come calling, because he's a great, great coach. Could stay at Ohio State, like you said, for until he decides to retire, probably. But yeah, I'll be interested if maybe some of these other big ones come calling, if he gets happy feet.
It's weird. Like you said, like Ohio State is just quietly great at basketball, and it's just because they're a football school. Like, no matter what the basketball team does, like, they'll always be second tier. But they're different second tier than, say, a different football. I was going to say Alabama's basketball team, but they're playing really well right now.
So. Yeah.
But, like, you get what I'm saying is, like, it's just they could – if it was any other team school than Ohio State would be a basketball school. Like they're at that level. So I guess other cold, I think the next coldest is probably Brad Underwood, who has taken that program. They're very happy with where they are as a program. I think the rest of the Big Ten thinks it's cute. Like, I'm not that impressed, but I'm happy that they're happy, I guess. But that's where how I feel about Underwood. Like, they're really happy with him, and I'm like, okay, he's done well. But like, calm down a little bit.
Yeah, like he's in the like nicely refrigerated category. Like, it's not frozen, it's not the tundra, it's not anything crazy, but like, things are fine. Things are going to be kept well here for some period of time. They did just lose at home to Arizona.
It's fine.
Yeah, which is fine. Arizona's top 10 team this year. But yeah, I don't, you know, they're fine. They're fine. They're good. He shouldn't have anything to worry about. He brought them back from the dead, and he's putting guys in the NBA. I don't know what else you want from him.
Right. But they're not, until further notice, they're not for real.
No, I don't think so. I don't think they have the guards to be for real. And I know Coburn's a stud, but we've said it time and time again. We'll say with this next team, because it's the same deal, front courts do not win you championships. They never have in college basketball, ever, ever. It's always the guards. The guards are what make teams great, especially in college basketball. And that is ultimately going to be the undoing, I think, or has been to this point this season, of Juwan Howard's team at Michigan. Again, I don't think any Michigan fans are going to complain about Juwan Howard. They were number one seed last year, wildly overproduced. He pulled some guys out of the portal that really did well for him. Managed to get Dickinson to come back, landed some good recruits this year. And yet he sits at, 8-4? 6-4. 6-4. Just lost a game at home to those same Wisconsin Golden Gophers that Michigan State beat.
Golden Gophers, I think you meant.
Minnesota?
You went with Wisconsin Golden Gophers.
Oh, well, I meant to say Minnesota. And additionally, I have now discovered a new nickname, which is Minnesota, because they are super duper mid. Yeah, Michigan has not just lost games this year. They had a close home loss to Seton Hall, but they've gotten their doors blown off in the other three. Got smoked by Arizona, got smoked by North Carolina. And despite only losing by 10, we're never really in the game against got smoked by Arizona, got smoked by North Carolina, and then despite only losing by 10 at home against Minnesota, never were really in that game. They've got big-time problems, and it starts with the fact that their backcourt is Eli Brooks, and that's it. And that is, quite frankly, not a place you want to be. So big test in front of Juwan the rest of the way.
Can you imagine if Eli Brooks didn't come back? Like, and I say it like that because he's fine. I'm not going to trash the kid. You can't rely on Eli Brooks to come back.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Eli Brooks came back and the nation was like, oh damn. Okay. Like, but he's not the reason it matters. And it's like, no, that mattered more so that they can be mid because if they don't have him,
he's the only thing making them a tournament team right now.
That's what I mean. And it's, I'm not 100% sure why I'm not understanding their rotation or lack thereof. I mean, Brooks is playing 35 minutes a game. Yep. And Bufkin, McDonald's All-American, Kobe Bufkin, and he doesn't play at all. So I just, like, I don't understand the future. Like, what if this kid, like, what's the future look like? If you're not, I'm just really
confused. Yeah. Well, not only Bufkin, but Frankie Collins, the other freshman guard.
He doesn't play either.
Yep, he's playing 12 minutes a game. I mean, if you're playing, you got 35 minutes a game, like Eli Brooks, you need more than – I mean, listen, he's scoring fine. He's shooting 37% from three, scoring 14 points a game. But you just need more impact from a guy like that. Like 35 minutes a game are Cassius Winston.
It's because the drop-off is so severe that you have right. – He has to.
And the problem for them is that their pieces don't match. Their best pieces are Diabate, Houston, and Dickinson. And it's like when Michigan State had Nick Ward. They are a much worse version of when Michigan State had Nick Ward, Miles Bridges, and Jaren Jackson. That is like the Michigan State component of that comparison is like on steroids compared to what you're talking about here for Michigan. But it's the same deal where you had three guys that we're all your best three players at the time on that specific roster.
Yeah.
And yet you couldn't really play them all together. And that's the problem because Diabate can't shoot.
Yeah.
Houston is underwhelmed thus far. And Dickinson is a true center in every sense of the word. So you could make an argument that your best combination is with one of your, I'll put it this way. When your best combination as a team is when one of your three best players is not on the floor, that's a huge problem. And that is going to ultimately always limit the ceiling of your team. So to bring this back to Juwan Howard, I think this seat could get a little hot for him as the year goes on. I do not expect them. There's no chance in hell they're going to fire him or anybody's going to talk about anything super serious with him this year. But if they finish in the 8-10 seed range, which is looks like where they're headed, and they don't have a great year, the pressure's on for next year for him. And you have to wonder if maybe he starts asking himself, do I want to do this at the college level anymore? When guys in the NBA, I don't have to be as X and O oriented. Because what he's missing right now is, if he was a great X and O tactician, you can overcome some of the things that he's facing. But you're just not seeing it. And I just wonder if the conversations start to get kind of real depending on what happens the rest of the way. So while his seat is cold, I think there's a chance that it could get more interesting than that.
Yeah. If they don't make the tournament this year, I think people start to question all of it. Like all of it.
100%. Shine wears off real quick.
So, you know, lot still to play. I think they will make the tournament. They're too talented not to, frankly. And that's why there'd be a problem. They're way too talented not to.
So totally that's agree.
An issue. You said something in the beginning. I just want to go back to guards win. And you'd think Juwan Howard would know that. I mean, he and Chris Webber, they couldn't win. They couldn't win at all because they were the guys. They need a guard. Like, Jalen Rose wasn't good enough. So they needed more, and they couldn't win at all. They got really close. But he should know more than anyone. Guards win championships. So, you know, the lesson continues to be taught, apparently. Matt Painter, also ice cold. It was nearing frosty territory as he led Purdue to new heights, Austin. The first ever number one ranking for Purdue. And wow. Immediately goes out and loses to Rutgers. And that second part didn't need to even be said. If you're being ranked for number one for the first time in your program's history, you are an unserious program. I cannot take you seriously. You've never been ranked number one. Like, come on. That is embarrassing.
I agree. And then to go out and almost have an 0-2 week, by the way, almost by the skin of their teeth. Not having an 0-2 week, the week you make it to number one for the first time, and to lose, not only to lose in the first game you ranked as number one, but to lose to Rutgers on a last second half court shot is so amazing in so many different ways. God, it was, I don't enjoy people's, like, I don't enjoy fan bases' heartbreak as, like, I should say it this way. I enjoy Purdue basketball fans' heartbreak more than I enjoy most fans' heartbreak in any sport. It's just so much fun. They almost turned around and lost to NC State at home, but ended up going to overtime and winning by 10. But yeah, I don't think Painter's in any kind of real trouble. I actually don't think Painter's ever in any trouble at all. I think Painter has like the very Kirk Ferentz-y job where they're just going to stick with him forever because that's what Purdue does with head coaches. It's like the Steelers. Like even if Mike Tomlin's bad again this year, it's like, well, the Steelers don't fire coaches. Okay, so we'll just keep this coach. It's the same deal.
I got so upset rethinking about the fact that they were a basketball school. They call themselves a basketball school, and they've never been ranked number one. It inspired me to tweet at Purdue live. That is unacceptable.
I am upset for you guys.
You're going to look me in the eye and tell me you're a basketball school and you've never been ranked number one. Can't have it.
Can't have it. Will not. Can't do it.
Yes, program.
Can't live with them. Won't do it.
You know what the most unserious program in the Big Ten is, though, is Chris Collins' Northwestern Wildcats. And they're fine being unserious. But Chris Collins is not on either the cold or the warm seat. Austin, we decided to call this the "we got our eyes on you" seat. And Chris Collins, I'm just going to say the shine of the NCAA tournament maybe can never wear off at Northwestern. Maybe it does. But it's been a while.
It has. And it's been ugly since then. And this year is, it just feels like they're 7-2. They've beaten Maryland. They beat Georgia. I don't know if that means anything, but it's a name. But you just, I don't know. Like, I just don't believe it. I just don't believe it at all. Like, they have four guys that are scoring double digits, although Chase Audidge has only played two games, apparently, given minutes to a lot of different guys. I think this is an incredible litmus test for how far one NCAA appearance can carry a coach. Like, this is the defining, like, clinical trial.
It can simply cannot be anything. I mean, this is it. You can't. This is going to last 5 years, I think. And that is so long to not go.
Yeah. You said it like it's not a crazy statement.
No.
It's an absurd statement.
It's absurd. And it's going to be fine. And maybe it should be. You know, I don't know. Who am I to say that? I don't even, I feel for them a little. They're on.
You do?
No, I don't.
I don't. It's the whole tree falling in the woods paradigm, where it's like, if this happens, does anybody care? I don't think so.
Exactly.
If it happens in this brand new, beautiful gym, does anybody care? No. No, we don't.
They're playing shitty in front of empty, really nice seats now. Instead of bleachers, I guess.
This is a beautiful high school. And you are all shaming it.
Man. You know what also? We got our eyes on them in football, but now in basketball too. Because here's the thing. I think actually Greg Gard will never not be on the hot seat at Wisconsin. Like, I know he's in our eyes on you, but I think that fan base, they worship Bo Ryan, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And nothing will ever be good enough. And this guy, like, remember he, like, won the league with that garbage team? And people were still like, I don't know about this guy. You know?
Yeah, I think he's already outlived. Like, he's – what's the analogy? He's like – a can of soup that you leave in your cupboard and then you look at it and you're like, we should really throw that away. And then you sort of forget about it and it like gradually makes its way to the back and you never see it again. And then you look back there again and you're like, I should really throw that away. Turns out it's been there for 6 years. This guy took over the program in 2015. That's insane. He hasn't made it to the Sweet 16 since 2016-17.
Really?
He hasn't? Yeah.
What?
Well, that's because they canceled the tournament when he tied for first place in the Big Ten in 2019-20.
You can't look in the eye and tell me that team would have definitely gone past the Sweet.
No, absolutely not. They haven't. Here's a question for you. How many times have his teams lost single-digit games in a season?
God. Like, twice?
One.
What? Once
in his first year when he only coached 23 games. Yes, they went 15-8 under him. Yeah.
Bo's Crutes as the Scotties, I'll tell you.
Yep. Yeah. So I think people have simply forgotten that he is there. And eventually they're going to figure it out and they'll do like the full clean sweep and be like, you know what, let's throw some stuff away.
Well, and you know why? It's because they're playing the same game over in the thing they care about a little more, football. Is there like, Paul Christ, do we like this guy? Like, should we get rid of him? Is he doing well? We don't even know, you know, because it's just like so mid, and Greg Gard is just reaping the benefits of Paul Christ's midness.
Oh, yeah. He's flying under the radar. Nobody knows that he's there. He's not produce. He's soup. No one realizes he's there and he's gone bad.
Even though, like you said, soup won't go bad for 5 years, but it's really
exactly.
It's been
but then when then when you open it up, it's gnarly. All right. We've got another one, and this might be. So we only have three to go. One man is still in the eyes on you, and then we've got some real hot seaters. The eyes on you. The last one here is Fred Hoiberg. John, the floor is yours.
I just need a little more, man. Like, I totally get mailing it in at work. That's fine. I'm not criticizing you for that. I need you to at least feign that you're trying to improve things. Because I don't get that impression at all. Like, this guy is just, like, he cashed out at Iowa State. You know, then he got a cash to walk away in Chicago. And I think this guy was like, maybe I'll just, you know, like do not coach at all and retire. And then, you know, realized that was boring and wife was bothering him. And he's like, maybe I'll just go coach somewhere else. They'll pay me way too much. And I'm not really going to, I'm just going to put the out of office on until maybe year three when the AD comes in and is like, hey, what's the status update? And you're like, Yeah, I'll get on that. I think I'm going to really get on that this year.
Oh, basketball? I mean, my golf game's great. You want – oh, right. The basketball, right. It's Nebraska. Like, they're 5-6. They're 0-2 in the Big Ten. They lost to Western Illinois already this year. Whoa, that's bad. They gave up Oh my God. I don't even think they play defense at all. I haven't looked at their box scores recently. Oh. They gave up 102 points to Michigan. This is not a good Michigan team offensively. Terrence Williams scored 22 points against them. Like,
I'm laughing at
I just wonder what the game plan is. Bryce McGowan, by the way, very good recruit. You have to wonder if he's reconsidering his decision.
Well, his brother...
From South Carolina, dude, and you decided to go to Nebraska?
Well, his brother plays there, too, remember.
That is a bad decision. And you know what? You know what else that is? That's a bad brother. That's a bad brother. He should have told you don't. Like, you should be able to look somebody in the face and tell them, I love you, and I want you to be better than me. Go somewhere else.
I'm good. Okay, so obviously you know it's bad, but what do you think Nebraska is shooting from three this year as a team? Oh,
God.
Percent. 34% is Kisai Tominaga's 3-point shooting percentage, which is easily the best on the team. They're shooting 25.9% from three this year.
25.9%. So I was going to be over no matter what I said. Wow.
Oh, my God. This is near last in the entire nation in shooting. And that's what I mean. Like, Fred, I know your practices are just kind of literally go shoot around. So I'm shocked that 3-point shooting is not better.
He's taking the term shoot around very literally. Like, guys. I don't know what else you're supposed to do. You're here. I have to have you here. Do what you will.
He seems like a guy that is when the coach is trying to get fired for
college. they call that the Urban Meyer.
He's literally doing so little. But at least, like, Urban Meyer was doing things wrong. I feel like
he's currently doing this again.
I just feel like Fred Hoiberg is choosing nothing. Like, not even...
Some people choose violence. Fred chooses apathy.
I like to think that he's, like, in his office, like, watching Game of Thrones or, like, having a creative player dynasty or, like, playing Final Fantasy. Like, that's what he does at the office all day. And then...
he intentionally sets it up so that his computer screen, like, he's looking out. You know what I mean? Like, he's not looking at the wall. He's looking out so that when he can see everybody who's getting ready to come in, so he can hit the boss button the spreadsheets pop up.
He's just got Microsoft Word open, and it just has typed in 50 font basketball and left it there.
Question mark?
So, and he thinks that is good enough.
And he just calls players in. He's like, so, what would you add?
If you were me and you had a review coming up, what would you
put? I've got nothing.
This guy has done so less than nothing. I think he's just collecting Marriott points at this point. Like, he's just traveling with the team.
I think he's on the Holiday Inn Express plan.
What I mean, he's just racking up vacation points.
Oh, my God. That's so funny.
But, you know, because it's Nebraska, he's not quite at a warm seat. I think he can reach that point this season, though. Like, if they touch, man, they can probably beat a couple teams in the Big Ten because the bottom of the bottom is not great. But they could go 0-20. I could see it.
The luster would come off very quickly. I just don't know how you are able to rebound from that. I don't care what program you're at. Like, that's. It's bad, bad.
They're not going to be favored in maybe any Big Ten game this year.
Nebraska, a true underdog story. Somehow, the more I'm saying this, the more that I can't believe we have two guys with hotter seats, but there are two more. And one of them comes from our favorite program, the least threatening program around, this is how bad a job he's doing. He managed to beat the number one team in the country and be like everybody's favorite story. And Steve Picciel from Rutgers is still just doing an objectively really bad job. Like, his team is 5-5. Yeah. The losses have come to powerhouse DePaul. Lafayette. That's right. Oh. Lafayette. The Lafayette Leopards, who currently have exactly, count them, two wins, one of them being over Rutgers, 53-51. They also lost to UMass, another national powerhouse. They managed to lose by 34 to Illinois, beat Purdue by 2, and then go on the road and lose by 14 to Seton Hall. Listen, I'm not going to even pencil in any wins here for their next three-game stretch against Rider, Central Connecticut, and Maine. It's just a bad team. And the only thing for Steve Picciola is this is as Chris Collins is the litmus test for how far can one NCAA appearance take you. Mm-hmm. He is the litmus test for how far can one win against a number one seed take you.
Well, you know what's wild is they won a tournament game last year.
That's a thing. So true. Everyone forgets.
It's a thing that happened. And they would have made it the year before. They were 20-11. And yet we're so upset with the beginning of this year that we're feeling like he's warm. And maybe we're jumping the gun a touch, but I will say that you can't be losing to Lafayette, man. Just can't have it.
I didn't know Lafayette was a program. I thought that was Louisiana Lafayette when I was looking it up, to be 1,000% honest with you. It is not. It is a completely separate place.
That's a 300-plus Ken Pom team. Like, they went to overtime with Lehigh. That's a 300-plus Ken Pom team. Like, and back to, we said Nebraska might lose every game this year. I mean, if Rutgers wins, man. If they regress back to old Rutgers ways and win like 5 games in the Big Ten this year, I think next year looks really interesting for Steve Picciola. You can't do that twice in a row. And I'm thinking there's a pretty good chance he's gonna do it this season. So
he's the one that says he's the angry goofy face that says I'll effing do it again. That meme. That is him. That is Steve Picciola. I just don't know, man. Like Rutgers, look. I just have to question. Like, I think we were talking about this the other day. Where we're very spoiled because there's not that many teams. I don't think there's that many programs in the like schools that are able to consistently have good to great teams in both sports. Maybe not every year. Maybe not always great, but at least like bowl/tournament teams every single season. I cannot imagine what it's like to root for a program where I guess I can because I root for the Lions, where it's just such inevitable failure all the time. Like, it just must be – I respect diehard Rutgers fans. I assume they exist very, very much.
It sounds like I'd get really into the Patriots.
Like, yeah.
If I was them. I don't think it's possible to get as into or – become as big of fans of college sports as we are. If your teams are never, ever good, like how can you? It's not possible. But there's the other end of the spectrum when both of your programs are as mid as absolutely possible. And that might be a different kind of hell. And that is Iowa, Austin.
Yeah, Iowa. It's fitting that we're wrapping up on Iowa. I just don't know. Like, I just don't know from Fran anymore. The Fran plan, somehow Iowa is like the most diametrically opposed identity as a school and at football. Like, their football and basketball programs are so vastly different. Football is the most boring thing in the world. And then basketball is we're going to try and score 1,000 points every single game. And if we don't, we're definitely going to lose. And they've lost 3 straight games, Purdue, Illinois, and now Iowa State. And wonder if they get tired of Fran soon.
They got blown out by Iowa State, which is why that matters. And, you know, they almost blew. So they played nobodies. They played like 6 straight nobodies. And, then they almost blew a huge lead against Virginia. Then you saw the 3.
A mid-Virginia team, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. Mid-team. It's just – like once it's always Iowa's biggest problem is they actually have talented teams, but they fall apart. And it's because they reflect their coach, who falls apart all the time emotionally on the sideline, and his team reflects it, and they'll never get beyond what they did last year, which think about how sad this is. They won nothing. They won absolutely nothing. And it was their best year ever. And they lost in the second round. Like with
you get nothing.
Player of the year, with the national player of the year.
Yeah, like, it's going to get tough to get better. I got to say.
We love to
it's
see
gonna it. It's going to get tough to get better. My last comment, and then we'll sign off for the evening. They have a player on their team named Philip Rabracha. If that man is Zeljko Rabracha's son, I am not going to be okay. That's it for me. I might have officially crossed the line to too old.
Oh.
And with that, John, yeah. I think we should sign off.
I think you're going to hit the Wikipedia hard in a minute and not feel good. I'll tell you.
I'm not. No, I just won't do it. Someone's going to have to send it to me, which would be very mean of you if you did that. But all right, everybody. John, great show. Proud of us. That's it. All right, everybody. Thanks for sticking with us. For John, it's been awesome. We'll catch you next week.
No, we won't.
We won't. Great point. Wait a minute. No. The Sarahs will be stepping in for their annual holiday episode. You're getting a double dose this year. So keep an eye out for that. And we'll actually catch you in 2 weeks. Wow. Nice work, John.
All right. Catch you later.
We need a break, obviously. All right. We'll catch you guys later.
Yeah.